time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have back with us live here in the studios, Councilmember Shama Sawant. Councilmember Shama Sawant is in to talk about her candidacy for re-election for Seattle City Council, this time position 3. Shama, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us again this morning.
Thank you for having me again.
So start out and tell us, why are you choosing to run again for City Council?
We ran our first campaign for City Council in 2013. As everybody may recall, we demonstrated a live example of what a genuine alternative to corporate politics looks like. We ran a truly grassroots campaign. When I declared my candidacy, I pledged not to take any corporate money. And to this day, we haven't taken a penny of corporate cash. And I have a lot to say about that because some events have transpired recently. And we made $15 an hour the most prominent part of our campaign platform. We also campaigned for affordable housing, rent control, taxing the wealthy to make funds available for mass transit and education. And you could see just through the campaign itself in 2013 how much it energized young people especially, but working people in general, retirees, people of all ages and ethnicities, for people who have felt for years that they could never have a say in politics, electoral politics of any kind, and felt disengaged and disgusted by corporate money. And this is a nationwide phenomenon. You know, poll after opinion poll shows that American people, far from being to the right of government, are actually well to the left of the electoral choices they are provided, whether you talk about city, county, state, or federal level. And they are completely frustrated and disgusted with the influence of Wall Street and, you know, corporate money. At the local level, people are disgusted by the influence of big developer cash and the sweetheart deals that developers like Vulcan, Goodman Real Estate, and other corporations continue to receive in a business-as-usual approach by corporate politicians. And we offer an alternative to that kind of status quo of corporate politics, just corrupt politics. And it really, really energized ordinary working people who aren't political people, but who want to influence politics because they care about the kind of society we build in Seattle. And so we won despite the fact that we ran against a 16-year incumbent, a powerful Democrat, and we won despite the fact that we called ourselves socialists, proving that, especially for the younger generation, the socialist label is not a barrier. As a matter of fact, people are looking for an alternative to what they have seen in terms of establishment politics. And right after we won, we launched the 15 Now grassroots campaign and plunged into the struggle for $15 an hour, which everybody knows really mobilized thousands of workers in this city. We had protest marches, rallies, and by having our voice in City Hall, we were able to bring that grassroots voice, the voice of the movement, to the table. And it really demonstrated, you know, when we won $15 an hour less than 6 months after I took office, it demonstrated that we have to reject the false, what I think is a false dichotomy between inside strategies versus outside strategies. What we really need is accountability and real real upholding of democracy. And what I mean by that is, when we build a movement on the streets, that movement has to be accountable to the working people that it represents, the needs of working people that it is forming in order to win. But we need that same kind of accountability and say in politics inside the corridors of City Hall. And what we did was, we had a voice for ourselves in City Hall through me, and we were building a movement in the streets. We had the labor movement, the faith community, and low-wage workers themselves fighting. And it's really, really significant, not only because $15 an hour was the historically highest vote, highest wage, but it's significant because we won in the face of massive big business opposition. Big business fought tooth and nail against our attempts to win $15 an hour. And we won because we forced them to concede. We forced them to back down. And it shows the power of grassroots politics, the power of building movements and having that movement's voice inside City Hall. And following from that, we also won a significant victory defeating a program called Stepping Forward, an Orwellian name, because it was a program, had it gone through, that would have increased the rents of 7,000 of our most vulnerable community members by 400% at Seattle Housing Authority. And we defeated it because we built a campaign of the tenants themselves who fought courageously against Stepping Forward. And then just recently, I don't know how many of your listeners know this, but we also built another campaign of the tenants, which just a week, I think 10 days ago, we won a significant victory where tenants living in the building, in a building owned by notorious slumlord Carl Hagland, who were facing absolutely appalling conditions in their units, you know, roach infestation, mold, broken electrical outlets, electrical heaters that don't work and leave the tenants freezing in the winter. These tenants, despite those appalling conditions, were faced with a doubling of the rent because this slumlord, he has bought up this building only because he wants the tenants to move out and he can flip it over to a speculative developer and cash in on it. But well, the tenants, and you know, their courage should be really highlighted here. They said, "We're fed up with this. We're fed up with being exploited in this way." And they approached another council member's office, got no response. Then came to me. We immediately went to inspect the units. We got the Department of Planning and Development there, which issued 225 housing code violations in a building of 13 units. And because we built a public campaign, Councilmember Lakara and Councilmember O'Brien were part of that. We demanded redressal for the tenants, and the tenants themselves were speaking out. We had the Tenants Union of Washington State organizing the tenants into a chapter of their organization. And in an unprecedented move, this slumlord who has spent decades harassing tenants, and he's still doing, I mean, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of his tenants still in similar conditions, but he was forced to back down, and that's yet another example of what we can do if we have our own voice in City Hall. And following from that, Councilmember Lakara and I have presented a new bill, which hopefully will get voted on very soon. And the bill says that it would be illegal for landlords to increase rents while there are pending housing code violations. And, you know, every time I talk about it, people say, well, that's a very reasonable thing. How come we don't already have a law on the books of that kind? And I'm just laying out examples of why we need to continue to build our movement in a really, really powerful and determined way. You know, we cannot afford to relent. And part of being unrelenting in our quest for social and economic justice is to be absolutely clear that we need our voice in City Hall as well, and also understanding that it's not automatic. In fact, in this election year in Seattle, this is a local election. You know, people might think, well, you know, all this corruption, corporate money, maybe that happens in high places, maybe in congressional elections. Not really. It's happening at the city level as well. And I would recommend our listeners go and check out runforthemoney.org. And this is an excellent website. It's a public service by Working Washington, where they have been documenting the corporate money, the PAC money. Everybody knows about PACs and the corporate PAC money that has been gathering like dark clouds, you know, in Seattle. And so far, nearly $600,000 of PAC money has been accounted for in this election year. And in every district and citywide election where you see candidates, truly progressive candidates, running on a platform of affordable housing, on a platform of providing an alternative to the status quo of big developer domination. Every such candidate has been targeted. So if you look at District 1, Lisa Herbold, you can see that there is, I think, $200,000 of PAC money going to support her opponent, Shannon Braddock. And perhaps one of the most striking examples of what I'm talking about is the citywide race between John Grant and Tim Burgess. And I'm you know, Mike is smiling at me because we were just talking about the inept attempt at a shakedown of John Grant that was publicized recently on the front page of the Seattle Times, where he was apparently offered something akin to a bribe, saying if you let go of a lawsuit that the Tenants Union of Washington State had launched at on it's about a big piece of property across from City Hall, then the $200,000 PAC that we are forming can just go away. That's a classic shakedown. And actually, I'm really curious as to how, when I've hosted town hall after town hall in City Hall chambers, you know, because I want the voice of the public, I want the voice of working people to be a big part of what influences politics, which I think should be a bedrock of democracy. But for doing that, the Seattle Ethics and Elections Commission, you know, received complaint after complaint that somehow I was using that inappropriately, and all of those complaints were dismissed. But I think Casey J. Work of the Seattle Weekly, I think yesterday in an article, raised a really good question as to how come this shakedown is not resulting in an inquiry. You would think that something that looks very much like bribery and corruption should be investigated, and I hope that it will be investigated. I think because in the interests of the public, in the interests of democracy, I think that should be investigated. And but you know, I bring up the example of that shakedown just to mention that is just one instance that was exposed because it was done in an inept manner. But that's business as usual in City Hall politics. And most of it, the public never gets to hear. And that is why it is extremely critical that we, as working people, start defining the terrain of politics. If we allow them to define their terrain, we will never be able to fight on exactly on that basis, because they have all the billions of dollars. We don't. But by building a movement in the grassroots, we can redefine what shapes political outcomes. And that is precisely what we have done in the last 2 years. And that is why we cannot stop doing that, which is why our re-election campaign is extremely important. And the punchline of everything I'm saying is that just last night, a corporate PAC was formed against me, against our re-election. And the PAC has been called Neighbors for Banks. And it's really, you know, again, I can't help feeling that this is Orwellian, because the name of the PAC is Neighbors for Banks, and my opponent Banks, Ms. Banks, always goes around talking about how she grew up in the local neighborhood, and she's also made anti-immigrant remarks, not only about me, but implying for every immigrant, like, you know, if you're not from around here, if you didn't grow up in America, you don't really know what it is like for African Americans, which is all extremely divisive and disturbing language, anti-immigrant language to use. But it's ironic that a campaign that is presumably wanting to run on the basis that somebody grew up here has a PAC that is now going to carry out their bidding, which is led by an international investment banker and known union buster, Bob Ratliff. So, you know, here we go. It's the last 2 weeks. And I think that the main message here is that we have to really step up our grassroots effort to make sure that we win progressive candidates on November 3rd.
Yeah, my understanding of the reading of Mr. Ratliff's bio was he had previously, one of his many gigs that he had previously done was involved with the merger and acquisition consulting for Bank of America. So that
if that doesn't send a wave of anger among working people, I don't know what will, because, you know, I don't think people have forgotten the outrage that was felt when, after the recession, banks like Bank of America and Wells Fargo pocketed all the gains from the post-recession era, and we working people were left with an epidemic of foreclosures and evictions. And actually, as it turns out, a lot of foreclosure that was based on fraud.
Which I also understand Nick Licata in Seattle City Council is still looking into locally for,
yes,
for Seattle King County.
Absolutely. And I think I would say that for mortgage, I mean, for foreclosures that have that are proven to have been based on a fraudulent process, we should have a moratorium on those foreclosures instantaneously so that we can begin, first of all, investigating the fraud. And we need a principal reduction program. And we need robust linkage fees against big developers so that we begin collecting enough resources to build affordable housing. And we need rent control to rein in this completely out of control rent in this city. And we need the bonding capacity of the city to be used so that we can build thousands of units of affordable housing every year. And we need a millionaire tax so that we can fully fund mass transit and public education. We need funding for social services. So we need every avenue of progressive taxation to be used. And this is not something that is like icing on the cake for working people. Working people are struggling in this city. And it's a stunning divide. It's an extremely wealthy city. It's experiencing a GDP growth rate that is in excess of the national average. It's booming. You can't walk two blocks without seeing a construction crane. And we have the upper echelons of society, you know, just making money hand over fist. And the rest of us, working people, and I particularly mean people with the lowest incomes because they're struggling the most. But I also mean the vast majority of working people who ordinarily might think of themselves as middle class, but when they write their check for their rent and they write their check to pay off their student debt every month, they don't feel middle class, and they aren't middle class because the standards of living have plummeted so much because of a whole host of factors. You know, rent is skyrocketing, wages have stagnated over decades, and just overall, the gains from productivity have gone to the top 1%. But at the same time, you know, I mean, that bleak past and that bleak present is also accompanied with the historic changes we have made in Seattle. I mean, it's just been a sweeping shift in politics, and the $15 an hour victory is so significant also because, as the Seattle Times themselves admitted this, and they're not my fans, as you all might imagine, but they said that our movement gets the credit for coming out of nowhere and commandeering Seattle's politics. And this is what we did. $15 an hour was nowhere on the radar of corporate politicians. It was certainly not part of the agenda for big business, but we forced it on the political landscape and we won it. And that was important because it's critical that working people get a feel for how we can organize ourselves around concrete political demands like $15 an hour, like rent control, like a millionaire tax and funding for transit. And we can win. We're not just organizing, but we can win those demands. And the experience of, you know, just that understanding that we can win because we came together in solidarity and we organized with really well thought out tactics and strategies. And I mentioned that again with a specific example in mind. I mean, in the $15 struggle, if you recall, we had it straight from the horse's mouth, meaning big business and the mayor's office both admitted after the fact that if it hadn't been for the threat of the ballot initiative, the charter amendment that was 15 now's tactic, they wouldn't have felt forced to concede, to back down so quickly. And that is also a lesson for us that, you know, we can come together and use our ability to politically analyze situations and come up with correct tactics and strategies that will deliver victories to the working class. And that is exactly the approach we need to have in this election year. And there's just 2 weeks left. And I appeal to everybody who's listening, if it makes you angry that corporate money rules elections, if it makes you angry that an investment banker has now stepped in to influence the outcome of District 3, if it makes you angry that Bank of America could possibly decide the outcome of this election, then don't stand on the sidelines. Come join us and, you know, door knock with us, phone bank for us. Make sure that your voice prevails, not the voice of Bank of America.
One of the criticisms of you prior to your successful election to city council was that as an activist, you wouldn't be able to work with other city council members, that you would, you know, be too rough or something with them. It seems like the $15 an hour campaign addressed that, as well as talk about the surreal solution to when you and Nick Licata proposed a rent control resolution.
Yes. So first of all, I would say if you look at the tangible policy outcomes that we've had in the last 2 years since I took office, I think that record unambiguously shouts out the effectiveness of what we've been able to do. Because if you look at $15 an hour, the defeat of Stepping Forward, the passage of the first Indigenous People's Day last year, and Seattle was the second city to do it, you know, rejecting the, you know, abhorrent practice of celebrating Columbus, you know, who was a colonizer and a mass murderer, and empowering Indigenous people, the success of the winning millions for social services and for wages for city workers who are under 15 in the People's Budget Movement last year, the success of the rent control resolution that just got passed. You know, this is a resolution that demands that the state legislature revoke the ban on rent control so that Seattle can have its own discussion. The success against Carl Hagelin, all of this, you know, the resolution against TPP and Fast Track, which was part of, you know, a valiant effort by the labor movement. And the finally, after years, passing the ordinance that allows regulated homeless encampments, which was stuck in city council and was voted down by the conservative majority before I got into city hall. So if you look at this whole landscape of concrete policy achievements and campaign victories, there's no doubt that the last 2 years have been like a 180 degree shift from what we've seen in past years. And the reason that has happened is because we have our voice in City Hall now, but also because the approach to making corporate politicians agree with an agenda that they may not agree with, but you have to get them to vote yes, is by building public pressure. And the most strategic way of building that public pressure is to actually build a movement, which is precisely what we have done. And it also shows that when you have more progressive voices in City Hall, you can work together. So contrary to this narrative that, you know, I haven't worked with council members, I actually have, you know, what we have done in the last 2 years is council members like myself, like Nick Licata, like Mike O'Brien, we have maximized our opportunities of working together and working together with one another and working with community members, social justice activists, and the labor movement in order to push through progressive policy agenda. That's what we are seeing here. And we have got either unanimous or near unanimous votes on these progressive priorities, even though corporate politicians are against it. I mean, just to give you a very concrete example, and this is the example that you were referring to about the rent control resolution. I mean, let me back up and just talk about what happened there. So Councilmember Licata and I brought forward a rent control resolution, and we held town hall after town hall. We even debated the right wing on rent control to, you know, educate, you know, one another, educate the public. And all throughout those weeks, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, every conservative council member spoke out against it, you know, like, oh, rent control is so bad. I mean, just perpetuating this, just peddling these myths that have no basis in reality, not doing their due diligence as elected officials and even reading the articles that I was sending them saying, look, I'm speaking as an economist. These are myths. You owe it to the public to even look at, to at least look at the evidence, economic evidence. This is not political ideology. And but despite their vocal opposition, ultimately, they ended up, except for John Okamura, they all ended up voting yes on that resolution just weeks after denouncing that idea. What does that show? That shows the power of public voice. That shows the power of building movements. And just the way it happened, where they decided to blockade our resolution, but put forward a similar resolution from Burgess, who's facing a really fierce opponent in the face of John Grant, who's been a longtime housing advocate and who has a lot of who has earned a lot of confidence, rightfully, from community members and voters. He brings forward a resolution which, in the Be It Resolved section, says the same thing, which is that we want Olympia to repeal the ban on rent control, and you know, and trying to use it in his mailers. But I don't think he has fooled, you know, working people know where this all began. It began from our movement for housing justice. But the fact that just weeks after really vocally opposing it, they're forced to vote yes, that's politics by working people. And that's what we need to continue, because unless we do that, we will have once again seeded the ground. Just after only 2 years of a really brilliant movement building exercise, we would have once again seeded the ground to corporations for business as usual, where they can say, well, all that flash in the pan, that was great while it lasted. Now all of you, you know, young people can go home, leave politics to the grown-ups. But that would mean a continuation of homelessness, a lack of affordable housing, a continuation of a regressive tax situation where human services and social services are deeply underfunded. Education goes underfunded. Racial injustice stays unaddressed. So if we really want to reverse all of this status quo, then we have to fight. We have to understand this is a fight. You're not going to win this because it's morally correct. It is morally correct, and that is why you should join the movement. But we won't win this unless we fight. And winning this re-election campaign in District 3 is a big part of it. So I urge you all to join. Please go to kshamasawant.org and go to runforthemoney.org. Educate ourselves, and let's fight this the last 2 weeks.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us again this morning.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.